Welcome to the 80th edition of the Wolves Women Podcast. I'm your host, Nick, and today we've got a special interview episode of the podcast. It will just be myself with our guest today. Previously on the show, we've had former players such as Lindsay Glover, Fries, and Jen Anslow. We've also had opposition or former opposition managers like Andy Fisher, and also league officials such as Carol from the FA Women's National League. Tonight, we're welcoming Lewis Taylor, who is the chair and owner of Rugby Borough. So our opponents in the Birmingham County Challenge Cup. I believe that's the official title for it. So welcome, Lewis.
Thanks, Nick. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Lewis, obviously, so you're the owner of Rugby Borough. Some people might know that, that its roots were Coventry United until the beginning of this season. Do you want to just give us a little bit of a summary of that sort of move over and how that all went and sort of your involvement in the club?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you live in Coventry, you'd also be remembering when it was also Coventry City. Well, right back in the day. I think everything from Cov City to Cov United is well documented, and it's before my time. But we have had conversations with Coventry City since I've been owner, just to gauge any appetite, because they are the only championship team without a fully fledged women's team that is affiliated. But that's aside. So towards the back end of last season, when we were still Coventry United, I felt like I'd exhausted all options, really, from a facilities point of view. We really struggled for training time, as well as the match day experience just wasn't really good enough. We tried to work closely with the rugby club where we were playing. In addition to that, we were also training at the rugby club, but they were good enough to give us the slots at the start of the season because we really were struggling on space. But those slots were all they had, and we were kind of like in and out. There was no after time. It was very difficult to have time with the players before and after training. I'd say we've exhausted all the options, went through Coventry City Council, even got as high as their chief exec, went to Andy Street's office, who was mayor of the West Midlands at the time, trying to find some kind of venue, even if we had to put some investment in. And we just couldn't get anywhere to train and to play. So ended up having a phone call from Brian from Rugby Borough. And we knew Brian from when I first took over Coventry United. Brian very kindly offered us some training space back then, even just to help us out, because he'd found out that we I'd just taken over and the club was in a lot of a mess. And he just phoned us up and asked us if we wanted to come down, and I went down for a meeting with him. It wasn't the easiest of meetings, because it was a case of, we've got all the facilities here. However, we don't have a women's team and we would love one. So would you like to come down? And at that point, we were getting very close to the end of the season, knowing full well we didn't have a proper venue to train at for the following season. And also, we have got dreams of going full time again. So knowing that we need that space for full time, it was never the answer to stay where we were. So whilst it definitely didn't go down well with a lot of people, but at the same time, we couldn't actually build the fan base. Once I took over, the I think social media erupted and it was fantastic. And I thought, actually, might be able to build a real good fan base here. But it didn't really materialise. So it's the same amount of fans that came to see us at Butts Park we've got coming down at Kilsby Lane. So whilst there was a lot of social media upset, I think overall it's probably a decent decision. So we started to play from Rugby Borough under the name Rugby Borough Women. And I think we've been supported really well since we went down there. We're still our own entity. It's still the same club. But albeit, we're playing 25 minutes down the road. We've tried to accommodate any fans as well that wanted to come. We've got minibuses that are available at Rugby Borough that we can put on to collect. But there actually wasn't really much uptake. So that's we are where we are now. I think we've had a good season, bedding in a new home. And I guess there's probably a few people that might like to have seen us fall over this year because of it. But we didn't. So it's great. I think we're in a good place.
I'm going to be really straight with you, Lewis.
Yeah.
If you'd stayed at Butts Park, was it ever basically a toss-up of, let's be really simple, was a toss-up of Stoke Butts Park and Cove United struggle and maybe not stay together as a club, or move to Rugby Borough and flourish? Is that what you're saying, realistically?
I think it wouldn't have been that wouldn't have been the immediate decision, but that would have ultimately been the end, because when you think that our fees just for training and for playing at Butts Park were in the six figures element, and then if we can't go further than part time there, then eventually we'll just slowly go further and further down the leagues. And then when you're paying over 100K for training and playing in tier four and beyond, it's just not possible. So it was to secure the future of the club for sure. Not that it would have been an immediate decision that season. It
No,
would have just
understand that.
been, yeah, but it would have been tough to keep it going for sure.
I think, Lewis, thank you for being so open about that. It's really, I remember seeing the uproar at the time, and I know I listened into a couple of your briefings, and you were very open at that process about sort of briefing the fans. So that was really, let's be honest, an owner of a football club engaging with fans, who would believe it? Hey, I think, we should have cards on the table here as well. You are actually a Wolves fan.
I am.
So, most important question, first of all, have you got your half and half scarf sorted for Tuesday night, ready for?
I don't. I would never ever dream of having a half and half scarf. I went past a guy at Molyneux today selling the Crystal Palace ones, and people were just taking pictures of him. He wasn't selling anything.
Yeah, no, I just no. I think the only time I've contemplated buying a half and half scarf was England versus Germany, Women's Euro final, and that was as we left having won it. And it was like, do I buy one? No, no, no. It seemed madness. But obviously, Lewis, with your company, Energy Angels, you were actually until a couple of years back sponsor of Wolves Women, weren't you? Is that what got you involved in women's football? Was it your links with Wolves and wanting to put something back into the community?
It was exactly that initially. So I think it was back in 2009. We liked it. Sorry, 2019, I should say. We all like to call that pre-COVID nowadays, don't we? 2019, I achieved a childhood dream of becoming, a bit closer to Wolves, essentially. We'd had a bit of hospitality with Wolves for a few seasons already, and I really wanted to take it a bit further and call it ego, call it genuine business development. But I wanted one thing about Energy Angels is we've got reach all over the country, but not a lot of people in Wolverhampton knew who we were, because we work predominantly with social landlords. So the decision to go and sort of work with Wolves more closely was partly as a fan, but partly with the business head on. And the conversation came up about sponsoring Wolves Women. And at the time, there was a bit of a link there as well, because you might remember Steve Cullis, who was manager and then ended up becoming head of football there. His now wife actually works with us at Energy Angels as well. So we already knew of the work that was going on there. But then when we're talking with the commercial department at Wolves and said, "Would you like to do that?" We jumped at it because it fit perfectly with our goals as a company. And also, let's face it, when you're putting sponsorship behind a men's team, I knew that what we were putting in probably wasn't even covering one of the top players' salaries for a week. Whereas what we were putting into the women's team to actually be on the shirts and be a part of it and be involved was making a difference to the club. So I, it really it kind of it really took me along with it, I would say. And the great thing about it was that we got to meet the players, we got to meet Macca. I've now since, I've still got Macca's number. We never talk about work, but I'll always drop him a text about results and say, brilliant result, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really nice. And I think there is a different atmosphere in the women's game than there is in the men's. It's a bit more down the rugby lines, where you could all sit together and have a beer and watch the game. You can still be rivals. And I don't subscribe to this whole family fun day, making it, super, super non-eventful, if you like. But actually, the fact that the women's game could evolve into like a rugby match because you haven't got the hatred between fans, I think it's brilliant. I love it. So yes, sorry, that's a really long answer to your question. How did you do it? But yeah, and actually the most enjoyable part of our 3 year sponsorship with Wolves was working with Wolves Women for sure.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I you mentioned about sort of the family friendly side of things and everything like that, and it always makes me chuckle. Matt, one of the guys on the show, he his better half is, for her sins, a Villa fan, and he's gone to watch Villa Women with her, and yeah, and they had Peppa Pig turn up, and it was sort of, and he just it was one of those sort of head in hands moments, and you sort of just no, just never have Peppa Pig. But have that, you can still have that sort of rivalry. And both myself and Matt were having a lot of banter with the Newcastle fans when Newcastle came down to play Wolves. And yeah, we enjoyed it up till half time. And then once they started, yeah, sort of beating us, it wasn't quite so much fun for us, but they enjoyed it. But there you go. But no, yeah, it's really interesting. Obviously, I've presumed that sort of there's a change in the commercial direction for either yourself or the club, which is why you sort of left the sponsorship at that point. Was that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was really through our work with Wolves Women that we got to see about the details of Coventry United going under in December. So it was some of the players at Wolves Women. I think certainly it was Anna Price at the time, and a few of the other players were sharing this news story about Coventry United and how that had been essentially dumped on them right at the last minute, just before Christmas. And I'd always had designs on getting into a club at some point, just from being, a fan and thinking, one day it would be amazing. It would never be, getting involved in a Premier League team, because that's just, I'm not a billionaire and I'm not going to be, let's face it. But if I could get involved at some point, that would be great. But it wouldn't have been for a few more years. However, when you see something like that come up and you see people are losing their jobs, and you just think, or I did, what can I do to help? So I picked up the phone to there was a chap called Michael Mogan who was organising a fundraiser, and Michael's done quite a lot of great work in Coventry. He was part of the City of Culture bid, and he's very much kind of him and his daughters as well do loads of fundraising. It's really quite remarkable what they do. So I managed to get Michael on the phone originally through Twitter, dropped him a message. What's going on here? Can any chance I can get you on a call? Because I'd love to be able to help. And at that time, I didn't know what help looked like, whether that was a donation from us to them just to help out with a wages situation, or could we even go and do something mental like take over the club? So there was no time for any due diligence at all. We've soon got in touch with liquidators. They hadn't actually liquidated anything. They hadn't even gone into administration at this point. They just announced an intention to. So got involved. It was mostly between Christmas and New Year where most of the conversations were had. Managed to get over to Coventry on New Year's Eve actually, and met with Jay, the manager at the time. And she took me around the Village Hotel, which they were kind of using a part of the basement as a base at that time. It was, I was just chatting to her and really interested in what was happening, and then did some very, very brief financial due diligence just to make sure there was no skeletons in the closet. We managed to get the deal over the line in January, so it was kind of a bit crazy. And with no experience of running a football club and no senior management in the club as well, you could argue it was absolutely bonkers. So we had there were quite a few people on the payroll in the club, but nobody really ever wanted the responsibility of the general manager position, even though probably there were people with the skills for it. But I can understand why, because I think they'd been on such a roller coaster with lots of previous ownership and so on. I think it's probably one of those jobs that you're sticking your neck out a little bit for. So yeah, but at that time I'm right in there from on a day-to-day dealing with the FA, dealing with paperwork, getting some of our own people who were in Energy Angels that had some skills that were transferable, getting the payroll set up, getting their accounts going well, the HR element, the contracts. And yes, yeah, so dive straight in, really. It was really quite interesting.
Yeah, there's a book there and a whole podcast series, I'm sure. As you said, there's obviously the connections between the players. Obviously, players in this area sort of know each other, and obviously, quite a few of the former Coventry United players who, when Coventry United went pro, sort of came across to join Wolves. Beth Merrick, Amber Hughes, etc. And in fact, I mean, I was doing my stats research, and the last time that we played each other in a competitive fixture was 18th of November 2018 in the County Cup. Cov United would later go on to win the County Cup that season. You won 5-1. With Amber Hughes in the team and Maz Gauntlet as well, another name.
Yeah.
The Wolves
team. Helen Dermody as well would have been in that squad, I would imagine.
Yeah, she was around. She don't think she played that day, but she was obviously around at that point. The Wolves team included both the Cross Twins, Tammy George, Morph, and Perks at Anna Price, and Jade scored the Wolves goal. And another useless stat for the stat boffin, so you can drop this in later, Lewis, when you're talking in the director's box, is that the last three fixtures between Wolves and sort of Cov United rugby, Jade Cross has scored in every single one of them. So there you go. So she's got a good reputation of scoring against you. So there you go. So I mean that sort of touched on the lot of the history there and the sort of background of how you got involved. Looking at this season, you sort of alluded to it as we talked about sort of rugby's target. I mean, and be honest with everybody, you know, Lewis, you've said to us you've not been heavily involved in the football side of things, so won't dive too deeply into it. But what were the targets? What did you as the owner set as the targets for this season, and have they been met? And I'll, you know, be interested to know. Was the county that target?
Couple of things here, Nick, really. So I had a conversation with Lee and Sean at the sort of back end of last season, and also Jack, who was the general manager at the time. I said, look, guys, I'm not here to kind of cut your legs away from under you. Obviously, it's a different story this year to last year because there's a massive income drop, not least the commercial income and the grants that come, but also there's a workforce development fund, which was another 250k into the coffers that helped pay for things. So it was, I mean, we're talking a near £500,000 drop just last year. But I said to them, one thing I need from you is I need to get back into my day job for this next year because I've been neglecting it. And we have a very big project that's almost coming to an end now within Energy Angels. So I said, I need you to leave me alone because I've given Coventry United way, way more than I probably had to give time-wise over the previous 18 months, you know, fighting a relegation battle and then also trying to rebuild something the following season. So I said, but let's make it a football first approach here instead. So where I'm coming from is I'm not really too fussed about the back office. Let's go and enjoy our football because we'd had a horrible season. Beat by quite a few goals. You know, I went to Sheffield United and watched us get beat 9-0, and our keeper got, in my opinion, assaulted in the first 10 minutes. And it was just horrible to watch. And I was like, let's just not have a season like that. So we made sure that there was a good budget for players, not the same as the year before, but a good budget for players that would give us an outside chance of going up again. So from a footballing point of view, I said, let's actually try and bounce back. But let's at least have a great season and enjoy it and score some goals. And that was really, I think it's gone down as a success this year. We haven't gone up. And the only two teams that beat us twice are the two teams above us. And I think it's quite a fair league this year. I think every team shouldn't really moan too much about their final position.
Yeah, I was going to say Southerns, but you, Portsmouth obviously have dominated that league this season, and hashtag have given a good run for the money, and you've finished comfortably third. I mean, so you seem to have adjusted therefore well to life in Tier 3, and therefore settled into rugby. How's that sort of worked out with rugby, with the settling in there?
Yeah, it's good. I think there's still a little bit of teething because. For us, we didn't want to go in and say, hey, we're the, you know, semi-pro team, you all move out of our way type thing. We're here, we're on someone else's patch still, essentially. And the stuff that's going on there that we really didn't want to disrupt too much. But at the same time, we did need time carving out where we'd had previous experience at Cov Rugby, where that time wasn't carved out. So, and at least we're in a football place now, and they understand, you know, we've had times in the past where not at rugby, but in our previous place, you know, we've had to go in before a match day and there's been a do on the night before and we're clearing up broken glass off the pitch and things like that. So it's like, you know, this is one of the many reasons why we had to move down the road. But so coming to rugby, it was a breath of fresh air. You feel like you're in a football place, which is brilliant. So the players, I think, get a lift straight away because they know that they're in a place they can call home. There's loads of land there. We can build a women's hub there. We've had permission from the chairman of Rugby Borough, which is run as a charity community trust. So we can put down some roots. There's some logistical stuff that we've kind of struggled, you know, where pitches get double booked when we're training and things like that. But they've got so much space, we just move on to another pitch. So it's not the end of the world. It's just instead of being on the main pitch, we're on the other Astro pitch. And there's a third Astro pitch going in at the moment as we speak as well. So it's a really, really good facility.
No, it sounds really positive. Quick couple of footballing questions, and I appreciate if you how much you can't or can't give and or don't want to give the giveaway. Does Lee have a particular style that we should be looking out for? Particularly, you know, is he a rigid 4-4-2 man, or is he a flying wing backs, five at the back?
The great thing about what Lee's been able to do this year, he's been able to chop and change. And I think he's got such a varied squad as well. He's been able to do whatever he feels for the game. So I think we were very much a high press team. The domination of the opposition, I think, is where we try to go to. I haven't always got that right. And there's me talking as if I'm a football aficionado when I'm watching from far via the VO camera because I'm still working on a Sunday, or I've taken my lad to Sunday League because he started for Sunday League this year as well. So I'm still a dad at the end of the day, as well as a football club owner. So, I think Lee will mostly go with whatever he feels is right for the match ahead. And I've seen quite a few different formations. So that's like that. There's your politician's answer there, Nick.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Lee will be glad that you've not given anything away. I mean, and I suppose for Wolves fans looking at, I mean, who are the key players would you say that we should look out for? The particular names that we should be aware of?
Some will be well known as well, but you've got Lily Greenslade. That she's our top scorer. She's scored 20 goals across all competitions this year. Got Ange Nixon, who's very good on the ball. And also got a goal in her as well. So she's sort of coming through the middle or can also play off the strikers. The other one as well is that we still managed to retain five from last season. So it wasn't a complete, you know, everybody just disappeared on us. So we've still got a really good spine. We've still got Katie Morris and Ebony Wiseman in the middle, which, you know, they were holding their own in the championship, let alone in tier three. So I think, you know, should the glorious day come that we can go up again, we've got really good players that can adapt. Of course, we've got Georgia Robertson from Durham as well at the back. So she's quality signing. Alana Mann is still with us and she'll play fullback. So there's quite a few. We've also, you know, our keeper from last year, she didn't play much last year, but she was Freya. She's come in, and also Erin Foley as well. So honestly, I wouldn't want to single individuals out. We've still got Lucy Whipp as well, who not so long ago was playing for Birmingham in the WSL. So I think that we've got a strong team, but probably a nice understated team that we just go out there and do the job.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. Some good names, as you say. Like, I mean, we all know Katie Morris, obviously, very recognisable with her goggles, etc. as well. So, it's anticipated that rugby, obviously, sort of will be moving into the Northern Division, Tier 3 Northern next season. That will give you some fresh challenges, I presume, as a club. But also, I suppose, with you having sort of, you know, being in there with Wolves, West Brom, Stourbridge, Stoke, give you some derby. So whilst there are fresh challenges, is that a really positive move for you as a club to be in there with that mix? And is it beneficial
for
you?
Oh. I think so. And I will just say it's not confirmed yet, but I think everybody who's into it and gets the picture knows that this is going to happen. So I'll be very surprised if it doesn't.
We've all drawn the line on the map and gone, right, where's the 12 North? Right, there you go. Yeah. First 12
and,
across.
And, Exactly. And it could have well been that we ended up in the north last season. We didn't know, but we thought that might have happened. So yeah, I think with Newcastle flying straight through, it really has provided an open league for next year, I think. And it's well documented what they've spent on the squad. Whether they've spent that wisely or not, it doesn't really matter because they've gone up. So yeah, could they have done it on half the budget? Probably yes, actually, but whatever it is, they've gone up, so it gives everybody else a good go at it. So we're obviously watching to see what other teams are going to be doing. If everybody keeps what they've done this season and just goes in again the same or just a little bit more, I'd like to think we can compete. If all of a sudden you get announcements from some of the big names like Wolves and Notts Forest, Derby. Any announcements like, okay, we're throwing X into the women's team? You think, okay, well, they're going to be the next Newcastle then. But it's really interesting because we're in a place in women's football now where that kind of the two tiers, the top two tiers, I think are going to get full soon, very, very soon. And to the point where a tier three is also going to be quite a competitive tier. It already is competitive when you look at the teams involved. So I can share with this, it's not quite answering your question, but it's going off piste a bit. I had a call with I can't mention any names, but somebody senior at the FA when we were still in tier two last season. And I wanted to put to her about having three tiers of one to two to three rather than maybe the pyramid started later. And as more and more competitive teams got into it, then have a fourth and so on, and let the pyramid drop, because otherwise the pyramid system makes it so difficult to go up. And then if you do ever go down, it could actually disappear your club as well. It's not very good system. And I even sent some costings over, and the message I got back was lovely. And by the way, what I put to her is, in the future, what about three 16 team leagues of a tier one, two, three, and maybe national as well. So, and the message I got was that there wasn't enough talent to fill those three leagues. Now, interestingly enough, this season, and that made me angry, to be honest, but this season, you've only got to look at all of the players that are playing across tier three, and a hell of a lot of them were playing in the championship only when I took over the club 2.5 years ago. So I think that's got to come. I'm bringing it back to your question though, having more Midlands derbies for us next season, and shorter travel times, so let's face it, less cost. But actually, more exciting games, and the fans can actually follow as well. Wolves fans can come down to our place. We can go to New Buck's Head, or if it's on at the Molyneux occasionally, how amazing would that be? So I think it's better for Midlands football as well, not only the league. So it's going to be exciting. But isn't that disappointing that you can take those kind of things to the FA and you get fobbed off, and then less than a year later, you almost prove that what everything you've said to them is the case.
I think there's a lot of questions and challenges. I know from various other things I'm involved in, I think the FA are looking at that sort of grow the game, sort of almost grow the game organically from the bottom up, if that makes sense. They get this, the generation of kids that are now playing football will be in 10 years, your players and your clubs, and almost you're expanding it that way, which sounds good on paper. But actually, you've still got that group of players, and as the Arsenals this will bring in the sort of the Stina Black Stadius, etc., and push down some of the talent the British talent, you're going to be have enough players around that you can actually sort of increase. And you're seeing players, internationals playing in the championship, then yeah, there's a need. It was interesting. I actually had a question for you about sort of were you involved in those NewCo discussions, and about you've answered it there. And I think you're right. It picks up some of those concerns about sort of that expansion, obviously, as they get more money, there'll be more of a challenge for the clubs in Tier 3 getting up into it, won't there?
There will, and so seeing it from the positive side, but also with some slight caution on the other side as well, is that yes, we want to see the WSL and the Championship sort of become this NewCo, because actually You can't let a regulator, which is what the FA is, be commercial, really. They can't, and I think they've been honest about that themselves and said, let's make it its own new co, so that it can do what the Premier League did many, many moons ago. What we've got to be really careful of is it just doesn't become these two elite leagues that then shuts out everybody else. And I think it, well, I hope it won't, but at the moment, unless some of it filters through to the lower tiers, and you could argue that same argument could be had in men's football as well, but unless that filters through properly, they may as well close it off and call it a franchise. And that's not what we believe in as football fans here. It's not what we go for.
Certainly not in England.
No,
We could
yeah,
go and watch the
absolutely.
NWSL if that's what we wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just moving on to something else, picking up obviously Lee's regularly sounds like he's just a moaner, but regularly complains about fixture congestion or lack of fixtures. It's the opposite of fixture congestion. Only manager in the league complains about not having a fixture.
Yeah.
I presume that long gap comes with the benefits or the downside of having playing on Astro is your games are always on, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but there's also the fact that I don't think the fixtures are put together very well at times as well. So, and again, this is a downside of having a league with only 12 teams in it, because you've just got to spread it out, and then hope that you cup fixtures filter in at the right times, and that doesn't always work. So I think one answer to that is let's make the leagues bigger and have more competitive games. But in addition to that, I think where Lee would come from, and I'm pretty sure I've had the similar conversation with Macca over the years, is that don't just pile a load of games in a short space of time and then have 3 or 4 weeks without a match. It's not good for the players. They are professional. They train in a professional way to get their bodies ready for games. So let's actually give them the respect they deserve and train them in a way and play on a weekend, on a Sunday, so that that training routine in the week suits. Otherwise, they're just stuck on a Sunday with no match time, and there's very little point to the training unless we can fill some friendlies in.
Yeah, I mean, I remember. I'm sure. Listeners know I live in Cambridgeshire, and I wandered down to. I dropped my kids off to where they were swimming in Huntingdon, and wandered down, and there on the AstroTurf was Milton Keynes first team versus Cambridge United in first team in a mid-season friendly on the school AstroTurf next to where my kids were doing swimming. It was great. It was free football,
Brilliant.
but yeah, as you say, filling the gaps. I mean, I think you'll find the Northern has been a bit more impacted by weather this season, and I think it's
Yeah.
obviously we crammed a lot of games. We only got to the halfway point of the season in mid-February, realistically, in terms of league games, and obviously then crammed everything else in mid-February to May, pretty much playing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you guys obviously down south haven't had it as badly hit. I mean, we even had, and it'd be interesting to know just what the impacts are on a club of having a game called off 75 minutes before kickoff, not going into which game, but we had one that was
Yeah.
called off 75 minutes before kickoff, and it's that general sort of issues. What would be the consequences as a club and that from yourselves?
Yeah, and we're not looking forward to that part for sure. We know where the worst weather's going to be in advance, and I think, everybody knows what games are going to be on and off, other than it seems the people who do the pitch inspection and won't say. So I think there should be a little bit more flexibility. I'm sure that there could be a rearranging of fixtures potentially if one team has got an Astro and the other one hasn't. And we say, okay, well, let's just flip that to make sure that the Astro is the one we do in the winter, in the where the worst weather is. A little bit of common sense applied when they do the draw and ensure that it. So you could probably get rid of some of these problems at the very front end just by looking at what pitches people have and making sure that those are in September or October and those are in December and January. So yeah, it's going to act weirdly though. You mentioned about you only got to the halfway point in Feb. Ours was a little bit the opposite. We played some teams twice before Christmas, and so hadn't had the opportunity to do the strengthening at Christmas that you would usually do in the January window, to then go again. So I know, to be honest, I don't, it's certainly not sour grapes. I think Portsmouth ran away with it anyway. But we do feel like we might have maybe pipped a second place in the league. Not that it matters now, but you just never know. Had we have been able to play half the fixtures one side of the window and the other half in the other side, just because of the way they did the fixtures, it was a bit strange.
Just wrapping up quickly, on the last pod we did our score predictions. Matt did 1-1 with Wolves winning on the penalties. I went 3-0. Lewis, what's your score prediction? And I'm presuming you're going for a rugby win.
I mean, we're always professional, aren't we? So I will go for a 2-1 rugby win. I will never ever be disappointed and begrudge Wolves a win, but on this occasion, I'm rooting for rugby, as you would expect.
100%. Well, Lewis, thank you very much for your time. We really do appreciate giving time up for this. And I know how you've obviously had lots going on in the background for the last week or so. So I really do thank you very much for giving your time
Thanks.
on
No,
a
thanks for having me
Saturday
on.
night, missing Eurovision to come on and talk to me about football. So no, thank you very much. So please do, give Lewis a follow. Do keep an eye out on all our socials, obviously, and do give us a follow on all the likes and shares, etc. Appreciated. And we'll see you all at the Burton Albion's ground on the 14th of May. And we'll see the Mighty Wolves hopefully win for a third time on the trot. See you later, everyone. Up the Wolves.